Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. Today we're launching a new series called Starter for 10, a series of 10-minute talks from clever people in our network. To kick this series off, we have the author of Anatomy of Humbug and Why Does the Peddler Sing, Paul Feldwick, to talk about fame. Over to you, Paul.
Hello. When you're involved in managing brand growth or developing publicity for brands, I wonder how much you or your colleagues use the word fame. Maybe you do. After all, it's 20 years since Jeremy Bulmore gave his wonderful lecture, Posh, Spice and Persil, to the British Brands Group, in which he remarked that the only thing all successful brands have in common is a kind of fame. My friends at System One Research talk about ads creating fame, feeling and fluency, while Les Binet and Peter Field have shown that campaigns that create fame, as they define it, are more effective. And I'm told Nigel Bogle of BBH used to describe his ad agency as a fame factory. But on the whole, I suspect we don't talk enough about fame. Traditionally, it's not formed much part of the marketing and advertising lexicon. Advertising, after all, was supposed to be about communicating product benefits or propositions, which would persuade your audience that your brand was better. It was not meant to be just keeping your name before the public, as Claude Hopkins scornfully put it nearly 100 years ago. The serious business of selling, we've so often been told, ought to be quite different from the vulgar world of celebrities, entertainers, and show business. And brands, we're told, flourish when they're built around a unique essence or purpose, when they offer the consumer a clearly differentiated set of benefits. Get your brand onion or your brand sausage right, cascade it through the organization, and success will surely follow. There's no need to bother with fluffy and capricious concepts like fame. Or maybe not. Today, I imagine most marketers are familiar with the work of Byron Sharp and the Ehrenberg Bass Institute and their bold claim that all advertising really does and all it really needs to do to make a brand grow is to build the brand's mental availability. The likelihood that the brand will come fluently and vividly to mind in as many contexts as possible. Not everyone entirely agrees with this, of course. But more and more marketing departments are taking these ideas seriously. But what does that mean in practice to build mental availability? Well, the Ehrenberg Bass people have some things to say about that. Most importantly, in Jenny Romaniuk's work on distinctive brand assets, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But they don't give us the whole answer, nor should we expect them to. I remember that when Andrew Ehrenberg started promoting the idea that advertising was mere publicity back in the 1990s, he was frequently challenged by ad agencies. Well, what should we do then? And in response, he would just grin impishly and say, "You're the creative experts. That's what you're paid to do." It becomes clearer once we translate the rather dry cerebral concept of mental availability into the more vulgar, popular language of fame. After all, no one yet has written a hit musical called Mental Availability. And when we use the word fame, we anchor brand-building advertising more firmly in the world of popular culture, the world of celebrities and entertainers and the mass media, which is where it has always really belonged. We stop thinking so much in terms of selling propositions and benefits, though these may still play a part. We may also stop thinking so obsessively, as many do today, about individual tracking and targeting. And let's remember what that contrarian San Francisco ad man Howard Gossage wrote back in the 1960s. "The buying of time or space is not the taking out of a hunting license on someone's private preserve, but the renting of a stage on which we may perform." That metaphor of a stage of a performance ought to be hugely liberating. It puts us back in touch with the world of the travelling medicine shows and of Phineas T. Barnum, a world which the advertising business has long distanced itself from, but which is in reality its main forerunner. It's not just about getting people into our tent. It's about keeping them there, putting them in a good mood, creating a relationship where they want to buy, and making sure they remember exactly who you are so they go on buying it when the show's left town. It's advertising as showmanship, not just salesmanship. It's not just a pitch, but a performance. So I believe creating fame is not just a legitimate task for advertising and marketing professionals. It's arguably the most important task. To achieve it, the first step is to adjust your mindset from that of the salesman to that of the showman. And if it's hard for marketers to achieve that on their own, then that's surely the main reason that ad agencies continue to exist at all. And if they insist on using the word creativity, then that's the only goal it ought to be directed to. Fame, in its earliest origins, is the Latin word fama, roughly meaning word of mouth. It can spread fiercely, like a fire, or it can fizzle out like a damp twig. It's ultimately uncontrollable. And perhaps that's why it's traditionally been an unpopular word in organizational contexts where the illusion of control is valued so highly. Nevertheless, there are certain basic principles that marketers can follow to maximize their chances of creating fame. And I think they ignore these principles at their peril. I've based these principles on many case studies of how fame occurs in the real world, from Barnum to the Beckhams, from Coca-Cola to the Kardashians. In my recent book, Why Does the Peddler Sing?, I outlined these four facets of fame at much greater length, but here's a brief summary. First, your show, your performance, it has to be good enough. Your song, your movie, your designs, your comedy, whatever it is, it has to appeal to enough people. To some extent, that's always indefinable and unpredictable. But as Derek Thompson points out in his really useful book, Hitmakers, things that tend to become hits strike an optimal balance between novelty and familiarity. It's not just about being original or different. It's about creating pleasure, evoking a positive response. And to make sure you're doing this, you have to understand and respond to your audience. Both those ideas have big implications for how advertising agencies today could get much better at creating popular, enjoyable advertising. But secondly, no matter how brilliant your performance, the chances are it will never become famous unless it reaches mass audiences. Despite the myths, things hardly ever really go viral. They may, if you're lucky, be picked up by a few influencers with mass followings, but that's just another form of broadcasting. You can use paid, owned, or earned media, and ideally all three, but paid media remains the most controllable way of reaching mass audiences. Of course, you may not need it if you're Elon Musk, but then you might still need some long pockets to pay for those spaceships. The third thing is, you have to be distinctive, so people remember who you are. It's a bit easier for celebs because as human individuals, they have faces and voices which we are programmed to recognize. So once we've seen them once or twice, we don't usually mistake Graham Norton for Jonathan Ross or Adele for Madonna. But brands have to work a bit harder to create images, colors, sounds, words, melodies or other things that can become uniquely associated with their identity. We used to call these brand properties. A more common term today is distinctive brand assets. And Jenny Romaniak, as I've said, has written a brilliant book about them. It's just a shame that they seem to have gone out of fashion in advertising agencies, as without them, it's incredibly difficult to build fame for a brand. Lastly, fame has to go back to basics. Pharma, the rumour that spreads of its own accord. Unless the public fully get hold of your performance and your distinctive assets and own them, display them, talk about them, argue about them, adapt them and share them and amplify them, you can't really be said to have fame. Now, you can never force this to happen, but there are many ways of encouraging it, through merchandise and design, through inviting participation, through provoking controversy or rivalry, all tricks which were well known to Barnum, but which still work today. Well, those four facets of fame may sound obvious or banal. I've often thought that myself. But then I look at the ads on the telly or the stunts that win today's creative awards, and I realise how few ad agencies and their clients are actually paying attention to them. So perhaps, after all, it's worth spelling them out. So don't be afraid to use the word fame in marketing. It's possibly the simplest and most important idea that can help your brand to grow. Adopt a fame mindset. Review everything you do against the four facets I've suggested. Put on a show that everyone will remember and want to be a part of. It could even be fun.
Excellent stuff. Thank you, Paul. I think I've learned a lot as usual. That happened the last time we talked. Our Marketing Society members and listeners, do you want to hear more of these? We're going to do them. If you're interested in being on them or have suggestions as to what you'd like to hear, just get in touch with us. But for now, that's the first in the series of Starter for 10. Thank you, Paul.